Hola, hello, bienvenido, and welcome to Chatty Carmens, a podcast that gives female-identifying changemakers of color a platform to share their projects, stories, knowledge, and experiences that have shaped their careers and viewpoints. We are here to inspire a new generation of Carmens, and I'm your host, Michaela Santiago Frobel. A discussion surrounding the importance of financial literacy, investing in yourself, leaving a legacy for their child, and connecting it all to mental health within communities of color. In this episode, we meet Ingrid Howell and Cindy Molina Howell, the wife and wife duo behind the children's book, The Little Lion Cub. I am so pumped to be here with two mamas, entrepreneurs, business partners, and college sweethearts, Cindy Molina Howell and Ingrid Howell.
Hey. And that's a good thing. No, I'm just saying, hey.
And you know, I am super excited to have them here as authors of the Little Lion Cub books. This book has begun to make a difference in their prides, which is what they call their subscribers' lives. So welcome, ladies.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming on. I would love to start off with you telling us a little bit about both of your educational backgrounds and what led you to write these books.
I guess I'll start. So I have a BA in English. We met in college, and for all of our friendship before we even got together senior year, she's always supported my work. I was involved in the theater in school, and I did some performances even outside of school. She supported my performances. And you know, fast forward to now, like I majored in English and with a minor in film studies, but I never used my degree after graduation. So, you know, fast forward almost 20 years later, and I write this children's book. And from the very beginning, when it was just scribbled on a scrap piece of paper in our dining room, she was like, yo, this is great. And I was like, yeah, you know, thanks, babe, sure. And she's like, no, I'm serious. Like, this is really good. And I was like, you're okay. So, you know, I sat on it for about half a year before I finally decided, you know what? All right, I'll bite. Let's look for an illustrator and see where this goes. And then, you know, 3-4 years later, we have this book. But even better than that, we have a business together. And for me, for the longest time, I've been studying about, you know, generational wealth, how to build it, how to sustain it. And you know, she was a little slow in coming around, but she's here now. That's the important part.
That's all that matters.
Yes, that is all that matters.
But you know, it's pretty dope that, you know, I found a life partner that is there supporting my dreams, and I'm supporting hers through thick and thin, and seeing the beauty and the growth of each other. And it's hard sometimes when you're that close to somebody to see their growth over the years. You know, you get stuck in a rut and routine, and it's hard to see them as a person that they are versus the person as you knew them as. But I think this year of all years was a lot of change and a lot of growth within this house. And I think I speak for the both of us when I say it was for the better.
Yeah, this whole journey has been challenging.
Now you're talking about the COVID-19 pandemic, correct? Or are you talking about your overall journey together through the creation of this book and
everything? Everything has been challenging. Our journey in marriage, our journey in friendship, our journey through this book, our journey through COVID and parenting. Everything has been challenging. But I think it ain't easy. When I tell you, when people say, oh, how long you been married? And we got to like do the math. We're like, all right, 12 years married, 16 years together, 20 years as friends. And then look at us like, wow. And I'm like, yeah, it ain't easy. Just know that. You know, I always say that we're yin and yang. because our personalities, how we move through the world, our belief systems, they're just so very different. But at the same time, we move with each other. So like right now, I'm a little bit more relaxed and laid back, which is her characteristics. And then now she's a little bit more neurotic and anxious, and which is usually my personality. So, you know, I think that's helped us with just balancing everything. You know, I studied psychology in college. I got my BA in psych, and then I got my master's at NYU in counseling for mental health and wellness. And I've been doing the counseling thing since 2004. And so it's just become innate to me. Like it's something that's already in me. It comes naturally. And, you know, when I read her story, I noticed that there was a lot of feelings in the book. Mm-hmm. And then thinking about how we can grow this book into something bigger, I told her, I said, you know, especially during COVID, there's so many mental health issues happening in the world. There's a lot of people who are suffering. They have traumatic experiences. They have just generational trauma. Mm-hmm. There's just so many things that people are going through. And so there needs to be something to help them. And that's what I was trying to go for, and trying to marry my experiences and Ingrid's experiences, and then the creativity between the two of us. It kind of made sense to create a book and create, you know, this website and this program, this organization, whatever you want to call it, this business, that helps families, that helps children, that helps just people understand what they're going through, what they're feeling, and then how to support them. But through the exploration process, right? Like through these fun books, through these activities.
In a way, it's kind of a curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it's a loose curriculum on social, emotional wealth.
Social, emotional learning too.
Learning. Yeah, especially in communities of color where, you know, mental health is kind of put to the side. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not made important, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, when you start bringing up, you know, let's say someone says, oh, I'm feeling this way. You won't get a response of, oh, maybe we should go to therapy, or maybe let's talk about how you're feeling. You get, suck it up, be a man, you know, suck it up. We got to get through this together. And
why are you telling strangers your business?
Exactly. Like, stop crying, be strong. You know, I grew up that way. I'm Puerto Rican, and my parents... that's all I gotta tell them. You know, so my parents were born in America, but my grandparents were born in Puerto Rico. And so, you know, growing up, my dad was definitely like hard on me. Like, I would cry. I'm very sensitive and emotional. And so, whenever I would cry, why are you crying? There's nothing to cry about. And he instilled this fear in me. And it was like, I had to suck it up. And still, I'm 38 years old. I'm still crying for everything. And it didn't matter. But I went to therapy for years. You know, but this is why I'm such a big advocate, because I feel like the more you get in tune with what's going on, and the more you can communicate that to your family, to your parents, it provides this safe space to do that. And I think with what's going on in the world right now, it's really important.
Yeah. Right. My family is Jamaican. I'm first generation American. And, you know, mental health, like I don't even think the phrase exists in Jamaica, because people don't talk about their feelings. Even just exchanging I love you between parent and child is, I'm not going to say it's rare, but it's just not often practiced. It's very much a tough love environment for all walks. So, you know, even like my dad likes to joke around with Mo about her profession. He's like, you know, there's no money in what you do. But she doesn't do it for the money. She does it because it's important work. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
For sure. And especially I can definitely relate coming from my background as well, right? Because it almost felt like if you had too much emotion, you were seen as weak in the family unit. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think our generation, we are more open to discussing trauma, talking about all those you know, and that's a big deal. That's a big deal that even when with our parents, we're trying to bring that out of our parents, and our parents are still putting up those walls, right?
Absolutely. They're fighting it.
Cindy, when did you decide, like, Ingrid, we are getting this book published? Like, Ingrid, I'm going to push you to get this published. It needs to get done. We're going to do
June 2020. July 2020, something like that. We have a saying in our relationship. I keep Ingrid grounded and she keeps me on my toes. And that's for real. Yeah. I'm the one who loves structure and I need to know where my next, where everything, where, how we paying our bills. I want to feel secure. And she's more of a, yes, let's try this. And she'll go anywhere. And she's,
we'll figure it out.
And we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so we had to find a balance. And I think this quarantine definitely was the most challenging experience of our lives, of our married life. Part of it was, she had already had the mental switch about being an entrepreneur a very long time ago. And then I was more like, I'm solid in my career. I've always focused in psychology. And it wasn't until her book actually got published in June that I was like, oh, crap, we could do something with this. And I just hopped on it. And then, you know, it took us a while to kind of it took her a while to get accustomed to this new Cindy. But I think, you know, that was, for me, it was recent, but for her, you can talk about like...
Yeah, so like I said, I wrote the book in 2016, but it took me half a year to start looking for an illustrator, and I found him right away.
How important was it for you to find an illustrator of color?
Oh, super important. Like that was number one on my priority list. I wanted to make sure that, you know, it wasn't a matter of excluding other people, but I just wanted to be more inclusive of people who might be marginalized and don't really have a voice, mm-hmm. or might get overlooked because of the color of their skin or whatever it was. And I felt like, especially with 2020, with all the protests going on, like I needed to do my part. I'm not out there protesting, you know, and if I boycott a corporation because of their policies, okay, yeah, that's one person boycotting. But what bigger impact can I make on the world? And it was just like, you know, I want, like when Issa Rae said, I'm rooting for everybody black, like I feel that in my heart. I am rooting for everybody black. If you're a good person, that is, right? If you're just a scumbag, then just screw you, whatever. But, you know, I want to bring as many people along on this journey. And it doesn't have to just be black. But I feel like, over the years, 450 years, black people been getting the bad end of the stick, and I'm trying to change the narrative. Mm-hmm. And it's very important. That I think that's I feel like my life work is about changing the narrative for people of color.
And it's also, we have a conversation with it not too long ago, and we talked about the generational trauma that exists in the black, mm-hmm. community.
Right.
And, you know, we're not just talking about the young teenagers right now who have to be in gangs or see gun violence or poverty, but like these slavery and everything that happened after that, and the institutionalized racism, getting a job, whatever it is, all these systems that exist, like that gets passed down from generation to generation. So a grandmother who gives birth to her child, and then that mother gives birth to her child. Mm-hmm. It's like even in the womb. I know it sounds weird. No, but
even the physical trauma.
Yeah, like it gets passed down. Because sure. Think about a child who may not have a silver spoon in their mouth. So they're already dealing with those things from the minute they're born. And then let's say they have a mom who's depressed or anxious or overwhelmed or uneducated because they didn't have the resources in their communities, because other communities are getting those things, you know? So it's like all of these factors that contribute to people of color's mental capacities, I guess. Not cognitive, but just emotional, and understanding that, right, and how it impacts their lives and their behavior.
One of the big ideas around the Little Lion Cub series is building generational wealth, right? Mm-hmm. And I know, Ingrid, you had talked to me a bit about TBD Gen Wealth, which is a project that you're working on.
That's my crew.
Can you speak to that?
Pretty much TBD Gen Wealth stands for To Be Determined Generational Wealth, because mm-hmm. as we are now, our wealth has yet to be determined, but we can, you know, make steps along the way to ensure that our kids have a wealth to inherit from mm-hmm. us. But as it is now, again, it's to be determined.
Yes.
But what we're trying to do is create a platform for people to feel comfortable investing, where everyday people can learn how to invest, what to invest in, how to pick the right companies to invest in. And also, we're working on a couple of YouTube channels to get our get the message out via three different shows that we have going on right now.
And here you are doing this. Here you are being your own entrepreneur, right? Creating your own wealth, trying to build a better life for your son. It's crazy when you think about it, right? I think about the fact that I don't know anything about stocks and bonds, right? So it's so important to start teaching our kids at a young age what it is to be financially stable,
And to normalize the conversation as well, to normalize the vocabulary words, normalize the conversations about it, because, you know, it's not just 450 years of being slaves. It's 450 years of being denied opportunities of access to wealth, whether it's red zoning or being denied access to the Homestead Act, being denied access to certain areas that
we can. The school to prison pipeline.
Right?
Like all these things, that in itself. All these institutional systems that are set up for people of color to fail.
Yeah.
And whenever, look at Black Wall Street, right? Whenever it gets big and successful, it's like, nope, we got you. Let's take it away.
But at the heart of it, though, I recognize that, you know, even if people of color had all the money in the world, it's not enough. Like, we still need that emotional healing from the trauma that we've been through. Cops are still shooting Black people dead without any remorse, right? So Breonna Taylor's family was just awarded $12 million. $12 million is not bringing Breonna back. They need help. That money is not going to help. It'll help to some degree, but only if they have a sound financial background of how to invest that $12 million. So that $12 million turns into 24. Absolutely. That 24 turns into 48.
And I think this is a perfect time to start incorporating those discussions into the lives of our children, because with COVID, people are homeschooling. They have homeschool pods. Yeah. They're remote learning. There's blended learning. So kids are only in school a certain amount of days a week. And so there's no excuse now, right, for parents not to take an active role in their child's education, right? And I think what Ingrid's trying to put out there with these different platforms is the opportunity for people of color to learn.
Yeah, right? In simple layman's terms.
Exactly.
Like you don't need a degree to understand this stuff because unfortunately, there's many families out there with less that are still inheriting more just because somebody in their family took the opportunity to learn it at some point, and it's been passed down through the generations.
And I tell you, I work with high school students, and they all tell me, Miss, why do I need to take this geometry class? Why do I need to take this algebra class? Like, I'm not going to use the Pythagorean theorem ever in my life. I say, right, you probably won't. And they're like, but why don't we learn how to, you know, make money and learn about banking and learn about this? And I'm like, you're absolutely right. You know, you should be learning about these things.
I mean, I personally believe there should be a complete overhaul of the education system here in the U.S.
I completely agree with that.
We're teaching kids to take tests, and none of it is useful information. We're not teaching agriculture anymore. We're not teaching investment, or we'll teach investments, but we're not teaching people how to invest properly. We have to teach people to fish, not just keep giving them fish.
Now, I want to ask, you know, what is your favorite thing about what you're doing right now with the Little Lion Cub series?
You go first.
Oh, the creativity behind it. You know, I'm a mental health counselor, but for this, I am the creative director. I do all the marketing materials, all the promotional materials. I create the newsletters, the website, anything that of that nature. I love doing that. Like, that's something, and that's something I'm working on for my own, like, separate business and becoming a creative digital marketing consultant. So this way, you know, providing spreadsheets and worksheets and templates and flyers, whatever it is that companies need. That's what I'm trying to do. You know, but I think that's my favorite thing about this. But I it's also seeing Lion's face. Oh, so our son's name is Lion. So seeing Lion's face every time we read the book to him, or he asks, Mommy, can we read Little Lion Cub's Lost Smile? And it's just...
When we take it out, he's like, that's my favorite book.
Yeah, it's so cute.
Do you think he knows he's part of the inspiration?
I think so. I mean, unfortunately, when you name your kid Lion, they actually think they're a lion. So I think anything name line, he's like, yeah, that's me. That's mine. That's me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's me. National Geographic, that's me. But for me, like, my favorite part of this whole experience is also the curse of this whole experience is that the freedom that it allows. So there's no structure to my day, to my life right now, other than what I structure. And I love not having a boss. I love being able to.
Who are you talking about? I'm your boss. Lion is the boss.
Yeah. So just having the freedom. I'm not gonna say to come and go as I please, because again, I do have a toddler. Having that freedom to be my own boss is fantastic, but at the same time, it's a double-edged sword, right? So I have to structure my time more creatively, and I have to create time when there really isn't any time, whether that's waking up at the early hours of the morning, mm-hmm. just because the house is still quiet, everybody's still sleeping, or staying up, you know, super late at night for the same reason.
Entrepreneurial life,
yeah. For sure. But I'd rather wake up at 5:30 in the morning for myself than to wake up at 5:30 in the morning for somebody else. Mm-hmm. That, it hits yes. different.
Being your it own boss. Leaving yeah. a legacy, right? And yeah. you're leaving yeah. a legacy. Yeah. And it's so funny to bring... You are part of a legacy, right, Ingrid? I mean,
I am.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So my grandfather was Leonard Percival Howell, who was the dude. He was the man. He was the man that started all of Rasta. Anything Rasta, that was started by my grandfather. And a lot of people mistake Marcus Garvey as the founder of Rastafarianism, but he wasn't. They had some similarities, but it wasn't the case. My grandfather was the one who started it. But, you know, history is starting to turn in his favor now. The Jamaican government definitely tried to suppress him many, many times, whether raiding his land Pinnacle, which was over 500 acres, imprisoning him, kidnapping my father and my uncle and holding them for ransom. If my grandfather didn't pay the ransom, they threatened to send them both to jail. Trumped up charges. Just a lot of stuff that my father and my uncle, and particularly, obviously, my grandfather had to deal with. So history tried to silence him. Jamaica tried to silence him. But, you know, the family remains, and we're still mm-hmm. fighting for his legacy, and that's something that I want Lion to feel proud of. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes from something and someone who saw a bigger picture for people of color.
So what advice would you give to anyone who is thinking about publishing a book? Or starting a program, who has this big idea, who has this book and wants to create programming, but is nervous to take that step, what advice would you give them?
Do it, because nobody's voice sounds like yours. And all the doubt that you have in your head about, oh, I'm not good enough, I'm not like so-and-so. There's a reason you're not like so-and-so, mm-hmm. because you're not so-and-so, you're you. And the moment you start believing in yourself, the world will start believing in you, and doors will open up for you that you never imagined. But all it takes is that to step out on faith and trust that you have something to share with the world, a unique perspective and voice.
Oh, that's nice. Because I'm thinking about what I was saying. I'm so practical. I'm like, you have all your ducks in a row.
I mean, yeah. Right? Yeah.
I love it. It's funny that you took that perspective. I love it. They hear yin and yang, right? Because I'm going to say, okay, make sure that you know when you're going to publish. Create these marketing campaigns beforehand. Do pre-ordering. Try not to use Amazon if you don't have to. Right? Look up a system that you're able to sell from your own website, so this way you get 100% of the profits. Find an in-demand company that you could print from. Think about all the campaigns you can be doing to promote your book. So, for instance, we did a website launch party mm-hmm. because we missed the book launch party because we just published a book and then that was it because we didn't think about it. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's so many opportunities to make money. There's mm-hmm. so many opportunities to grow your audience, to grow your family, mm-hmm. right? Our pride, that's what we call them. The pride of the pride. They're mm-hmm. the people who have accepted us for who we are, who have decided, you know what? I trust them. You know what? I like what they're doing. I'm going to follow them. Yeah. But I think we could have grown that family bigger if we would have done things differently from the beginning. So, yeah. But second book coming out soon. And we have another book in the works. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, you know, we're definitely going to do things differently.
Yeah. So just to piggyback off of what Mo said, sorry, I call her Mo, is that writing the book is the easiest part of the whole process. And if you would have told me that years ago, I would have been like, yeah, I ain't write no book then. If this is the easy part, nah, chill. But truly, it is writing the book is the cakewalk. Mm-hmm. The marketing and promotion, that's the beast of a different name that I said to her right in the beginning, all I want to do is write this book. Don't ask me about nothing else. Don't ask me about design, layout, marketing, SEOs. For like 4 months, I was like, CEOs? Why are you talking
about CEOs?
Oh yeah, my gosh. Yeah. So I handle all of those things. Yeah. I ask her, hey, what do you think of this? And then she'll just negate everything. And then I'll look at her and be like, no, we're going to go with this. And she's like, okay. But I do make her write blogs.
Yeah.
And I do push her to write the books. And then we have beta readers who we use, you know, for the arcs. And it's definitely a process. And one time she's like, I want to be doing more. So I said, okay, so you handle the arcs, right, with our advanced reader copies. And this is before a book is ever published. You send out the manuscript to a group of people. Some are people you're close to, but others are, you know, might have knowledge in writing or whatever it is, and you get their feedback. Mm-hmm. So she's like, I'm like, okay, you handle that. I sent her email with information and what she should do. She just sent it out. She didn't write an email to people. She didn't put like a copy or anything over it. And I just looked at her like, what do you, you know what? Forget it. I just do it myself. It's okay.
Listen.
Yeah. Listen. So. All right. So, and finally, the last question I ask all of my guests. What is chatter that brings you laughter?
Dad jokes for me.
Dad jokes?
I love dad jokes.
Do you have a good one?
Oh, she just told me a good one tonight. How'd it go again?
What's the difference between a hippo and a Zippo?
What?
One is heavy. And one is a little lighter.
Oh my gosh, that's so good.
I love stupid jokes.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's so good. Well, thank you so much, ladies. Thank you so much for being guests. And it was really meaningful to have you here. And what is your website?
www.littlelioncubbooks.com. Yeah. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram. It's all the same thing. And then you got
TBD Gen Wealth. Look us up on Facebook and YouTube.
Yes. Make sure you tune in.
Be sure to check out our social media platforms for links to our guests' work. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Chatty Carmens Podcast. If you or someone you may know wants to be featured as an episode, visit www.chattycarmens.com and select Nominate a Carmen. Adios!